The Swinging Palm Trees Podcast with Akin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and in whatever time zone you find yourself listening, this is the Swinging Palm Trees Podcast. My name is Akin, and thank you for taking the time to join us. Today, I have a lovely young guest who will be talking to me all the way from Nigeria. Her name, now she has four names at the moment, so I'm just going to read them all out. Her name is Ada Eva Iniwi Chukwunelo, but I'm going to ask Ada which one she wants to go for. So which one will it be?
Okay, Iniwi is not a name, Iniwi is a place. So Ada is like a title. Yes, Ada is like a title for the first daughter. So I just like merged it. Ada, okay. Iniwi, yes. So it's like one name.
Okay, so we're going to stick with Eva then.
Yeah, Eva is better.
Eva's Okay, so Eva is a digital marketer. She's a storyteller. She's a life advocate. And she's here on the show. And I believe she's also into cryptocurrencies as well. But so, Eva, thank you so much for joining us on the Swinging Palm Trees podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really happy.
Okay, so I've done the introduction, but tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Okay, the first thing I'll say about myself is I'm a poet, but not like a spoken poet, but I write poetry. So basically, like, that's something I've been doing since I was little. So I am a poet, then I'm a writer. Besides that, I love to dance. So, like, those are like things I love doing. Then while working, I love anything that has to do with media. Like, I've worked with various media houses, so I love anything that has to do with media, bring me to the spotlight, let people listen to me speak, let people see me. I just love being at the spotlight, letting people hear me talk. So that's just me.
So let's talk about, first of all, you as a writer. What kind of genre of writing do you focus on?
Oh, creative. I do more creative writing, yeah.
Okay. And when we say creative, are we talking fictional, non-fictional? Are we talking of horror? Are we talking of suspense? Are we talking a mixture of everything?
I do a little bit of fictional and non-fictional. So I love listening to people's stories. Then I give like a plus twist to their stories. So I make their stories mine, but like still have components of their stories. So that's what I do.
Okay, let's give that a twirl right now. So I'm going to give you a scenario. I'm going to give you a character. Let's see if you can create a story within the next couple of seconds and a twist in the end. Okay, here's the challenge. Okay. It's a bald man. He's a teenager. He's a young adult and he's bald. And he used to have long flowing hair. Thick lock of black, you know, black thick hair like Samson, a black version of Samson, if you will.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, it's not Delilah who shaved his hair off. No, unfortunately, it's not. It's actually his uncle who's his guardian. And he's been made mockery of everyone in the school. And his name is, we shan't say Samson, let's call him something else. Let's call him Samuel. Okay. Go, work with that.
Okay, so, wow, this is very weird. We have Samuel. Samuel is a high school student who is bald. He walks into the class one very fateful afternoon and his classmates are amazed at his very, very weird look. How would a teenager at his age be bald? I mean, baldness comes with age and it's something that should happen when you're in your 50s, but it happens when you're still 15. And yeah,
hey, I got bald when I was 20.
Oh my. Oh, okay. Wow.
But this is your story. Continue.
Okay, so he sits close to his crush in class, who is Daniela. And Daniela used to have an eye for Samuel, but I think she just fell in love with his locks and not his looks and not his heart and not his character. So she became disgusted and she decided to take her eyes off Samuel and look towards Josiah. Now, Samuel...
Ooh, plot twist.
So Samuel leaves the class disheartened, and while he was outside sitting in the courtyard, he heard a voice, and it was his teacher. So his teacher, who is a female, she approached him and she asked him why he had a sudden countenance within him in class. And he said, "Didn't you notice that I'm bald?" And that was when it occurred to the teacher that he was actually bald. So the teacher told him that I really don't really see people's imperfection at first. The first thing I know is about people's abilities and how they present themselves. And I love to see the good in people, and I love it if people see the good in themselves. And so that didn't really go down with Samuel because he needed his hair back. And motivation wasn't what he needed. What he needed was a miracle. So the teacher told him something. She took him to a wig store and she got him some wigs.
It works.
Oh, that was really hard. Oh God.
Where's the plot twist? I want to hear the plot twist. Okay, so fair enough. So Daniela has removed her gaze from Samson's locks to Josiah, because I don't know what Josiah has. Maybe Josiah has muscles. And the teacher has decided, you know what? There's more to hair than just locks. She takes him to a hairdresser and gives him a couple of wigs. Where's the plot twist?
Well, the plot twist is the fact that we might want Samuel to be confident in his look, but he doesn't. He isn't. So he actually needs some camouflage.
Gang, gang.
Oh, well, that's weird. That's a weirder story.
But it's a story, nonetheless. Okay, so moving on from the writing, you've also said that you're a poet and you also like the media. You like being in the spotlight. If you don't mind me asking, what's your fixation or your fascination for the spotlight?
Okay, as a child, I've always loved, I think one movie that really drove me crazy was High School Musical. I don't know if you know High School Musical. So,
I do. I have nephew and niece who used to be crazy for High School Musical.
So I really loved High School Musical, and I loved the fact that they could sing, they could dance, they could be themselves on stage, and the world could see them. And I loved, like, I always imagined myself in that space, like, doing crazy things, being myself, and having the spotlight on me.
I'm sorry, did I hear a dog in the background?
Yeah, I have a dog.
What dogs do you have?
Just one.
It sounds like a cross between a dog and a chicken.
There's a chicken. That's... There's a chicken is a dog, but chicken isn't ours. It's for our neighbor, then we have a dog.
So for the time being, we've talked about you and the media side of things for now, but you've also mentioned that you are a digital marketeer. What does that entail?
Okay, I got interested in digital marketing when I started my cryptocurrency journey. That was in 2020. So I didn't have any idea about digital marketing, and I hated marketing as a space. Like, I hated marketing probably because of my initial understanding of marketing. I just see marketers as people who talk too much, who go from place to place just saying really good gibberish things, and I just hated marketing. So in 2020, that was after the COVID, I stopped teaching, so I delved into cryptocurrency. So my job was to do more of social media managing, copies, writing copies, doing graphics. And I was horrible at graphics. I didn't have an idea on how to do graphics. I didn't know anything about copies, even though I knew how to write. So I was just doing it, barely doing it, until sometime last year ending when I got an internship scholarship. So I was interning with a marketing agency here in Nigeria. And that was when I got to know a different side to marketing. That's the media and digital marketing. So I always had this perception about marketing being person to person, or going from one shop to another, or from one person to another, trying to sell your idea. So I knew about digital marketing and I got interested in it. So that's how I delved into marketing.
It's interesting when you mentioned that although you are a writer, that you also came to realize that copywriting is a different discipline as opposed to creative writing. Although there are instances where they can both weld at the same time, but they're two different disciplines, but within the same sphere. Mm-hmm. You've also mentioned cryptocurrency. Now, I've read that Nigeria happens to be one of the biggest markets for cryptocurrency users. What led you into going into that form of finance?
I was broke.
I don't even know why I'm laughing, because everybody, that's the reason why we're all into cryptocurrency. So I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing with you.
So I was actually broke. And my cousin and my elder brother, they were already in the space. So they introduced me to the space. So that was when I got my first gig. And so basically what I did was to work for crypto projects, upcoming cryptocurrency projects. And you talk about their tokens, their white list and whatever, and try to like get leads to their social media account or to get people to buy or invest in the coin. So that's what I do for different crypto projects. So normally they just pay you. So the first money I got was $18 for a month. I was very poor.
What? $18 for a month?
Yeah, jeez. It was very poor. I was very lazy. No, not lazy. I was confused. And I didn't really have people to teach me, to my understanding. Like, they use crypto terms that are very, I don't even know the word to use, but they use crypto terms that you just cannot understand. They keep saying things like you just can't put your head to it. So I think that was one of the things that affected me. And I wasn't good with graphics designing. Mm. So that made me earn $18. That was very poor, but I was happy though.
I was talking to, I had a guest come on to the podcast, and his name is Akin Sosoye, and he created Ible Coin, which is off the Cardano network, and it's doing pretty well for itself. And one of the reasons why he decided to go into the crypto market was because he said that he had £10,000 and he went to the bank and he asked them how much return will he make on his 10 grand. And the amount they quoted to him just made him say, nope, he wasn't going to subscribe to that. And I also know that being in Nigeria, just trying to get your money off the bank is drama.
Yeah.
And on any given day. And also just trying to make an income is a challenge in itself. So I can totally understand why you would want to go into the cryptocurrencies. If you don't mind me asking, are your assets off the exchange?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because we know what's been happening with the news lately with FTX. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's very crazy right now. Like, crazy. It's very crazy.
So where do you think Nigeria will be in the next 5 years from your point of view when it comes to taking on cryptocurrency? I'm not saying that you're talking on behalf of cryptocurrency in Nigeria, but from your personal encounters and you being within the space in Nigeria, do you think cryptocurrency will take off?
Yeah, if we're to take the government aside, but people have realized that people are actually going into the crypto space like with a huge force. Like before, it's more about the money, but now I think it's about the tech. Most people are developing themselves in crypto skills, you know, product design, front end, back end, everything that has to just do with cryptocurrency. And majority of people learning this are Nigerians. If you leave India alone, we have Nigerians next. So, I mean, I'm seeing others doing this, even though I'm not yet there, but I see others doing it. And I'm really amazed because in the next 5 years, if the government gives us the right platform, I think Nigeria is going to be one of the top countries that are influential in terms of cryptocurrency.
Speaking of the government, how do you feel about the Nigerian government trying to release their own central bank digital coin, CBDC? Would you trust it?
Well, we can't. Okay, I should be mindful of what I'm saying. But we can't trust our government fully, so let me just keep quiet and move on.
Okay, we'll leave it at
Yeah.
that. We'll leave it at that for now. So let's talk about your Igbo.
Yeah.
Whereabouts from the east are you from?
Anambra State.
Anambra State.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I asked is that because Igbo people are famous when it comes to their proverbs and their sayings. Not a single sentence can go by without a village elder talking about something without him or her incorporating proverbs. And that was one of the reasons why I created the Swinging Palm Tree podcast. And you will be actually, you're not the first Igbo person I have had on the podcast, but you are the first Igbo person from Nigeria that I'm speaking to live. Well, when I say live, it's pre-recorded.
Okay.
Oh, that chicken, there it goes again.
Oh, can we just ignore the
Let's ignore the chicken. Like,
Yes,
look, it's just
please.
giving me memories of back home, so you have to forgive me. So you're from Anambra State
Yeah.
and you're Igbo, and this is a good segue. Let's talk about what the proverb that you're bringing to share on the Swinging Palm Trees podcast today. So what would you like to share with us, please?
My proverb isn't like Igbo related because I don't really know much Igbo
That's fine.
proverbs. I don't really know much Igbo proverbs. But there's one I do hear them say. They said, permit me if I don't say it well. Something like, okirikiri kaini buko se. I don't know if I got it, but it says, we go round. Did you hear it?
No, could you repeat that one more time, please? I didn't hear
I think
that.
it's something like okirikiri kaina ebuko se. I die really know. So I think it says, we go round the pepper tree and we don't climb it. So that's one thing I normally hear them say, even in Igbo movies. So I don't know what it means. I think that's
What do you, as a creative, what do you think it means? Your interpretation.
the pepper tree is very small. And
I was going to say, how can you climb a pepper tree?
So it's I think it's something that he's saying we can't climb it, but we go around the pepper tree. So I don't even know. I don't even know. I never thought about this. I never thought about this. I didn't prepare my mind for this. My mind is blank.
No, it is fine. I did put you on the spot, so that's on me. So I apologize. But what's your favorite quote or saying, or what you would like to share?
Okay, I think one of my favorite quote is something that I'm sorry I have to digress a little, but it's something that has to do with scars. And it's from Mama Cass of blessed memory.
Okay.
So it's one thing she said about scars and how we can hate them, but we can't and we won't. I think she says scars, we hate them, but it's actually something that remains part of us, and it's something that tells our story of survival and struggle. So, most of my quotes or probably things I hear are from Mama Cass because she's one of the people that inspires me, even though she's late. She's one person that really inspires me a lot. So, I think that's it.
And how would you put that in the sentence in Igbo?
Hey, I don't
Or in
know.
Igbo, or in
Okay,
Pidgin,
let me try
or
pigeon.
Yoruba, or whatever.
Let me try
Okay.
using pigeon. We feel hate the wound with our body, but the thing we say now something we go dey part of our lives. So make we no try to hide them. Make we no try to allow shame to catch us. Make we no say na wetin make us gay kata kata or the bata bata. I don't know if I make sense.
No, you know what? That does make sense. And for those
Oh,
of you
really?
listening to, no. I was going to say, and for those listening, the gist of what Eva has just said is that keep on going. No matter what happens, keep on going. Am I correct? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I'll give you a five.
We can work with that.
Okay.
Okay, Eva, so if you don't mind me asking, because I found out about you on Twitter and you came up on one of the people I follow's work and I saw what you do and I thought, oh, this is interesting. But there was something about your profile that caught my attention. Okay. And I'm going to read it out now, so forgive me. It says here, my left foot is in the grave. Does that make me a zombie?
Okay.
Now, I shouldn't laugh, but I'm laughing because you're laughing.
I mean,
because
dark humor, you're seeing the funny side.
It is dark humor. And so for the listeners, could you kindly share a bit of why you have such a line on your profile?
Okay, someone actually asked me that question. They're like, why am I being creepy? And I told them that I'm actually a walking, let's say, part of the Walking Dead. I normally say I am, because I have part of me dead and the other alive. So I say I'm a walking dead, and sometimes I refer to myself as a zombie. I think it's interesting. I normally take my condition like jokingly. I tell people when they meet me that there's something unique about me, and they ask me what, and I say part of me is buried. And I think that's a unique thing. I mean, most people don't get the opportunity.
Okay, I'm looking at your profile, and it says at the age of 9, you were diagnosed with a bone disease known as osteomyelitis. And if you don't mind sharing with the listeners, could you give an idea of it, not an idea, but a backstory as to what had happened, what was happening, and the challenges you and your family had to face while you were going through these trying times?
Okay. My story is kind of confusing because till now I still don't know what actually happened to me. So I just went with what the doctor said is osteomyelitis. There's this story that it's poison. I mean, because we've gone for various tests and we didn't see anything. The only thing that came out from diagnosis was malaria. So, but physically I had issues with my leg, but the hospital, they said there was nothing wrong with me. So they said it's something that might be diabolic, probably my village people or something like that. So it was not really easy for us. For me, I really didn't take it into consideration because I was a very playful child. Even when I had the issue, I was a very rough and playful child. So it was always my parents trying to lock me in so they could know where my problem is coming from. And I'm always the one sneaking out to play, to be, you know, to just be crazy. And it really didn't affect me much till I got to around the age of, like, say, 13, 14. So it was around that time that it really dawned on me that this is actually affecting my life, because it started affecting my studies. I had to drop out of school because I couldn't continue. I had everyday appointment with the doctors, so I couldn't cope with school. So I had to drop out of school, and I was homeschooled. So my parents hired a lesson teacher. So it was not really easy because someone had to stay with me at home, and that was my mom. So she had to stop working. She had to stop her job to just stay at home with me. So the whole pressure was on my dad. And in most cases, he had to take me to the hospital because he can't drive. So I continued that way till I think the peak of my, where I almost gave up because I was actually very tired, was actually that 2011, 2012. That was when it became very, very hard for me because I couldn't walk. For close to 2 years, I wasn't walking. So I was bedridden. If I had to go somewhere, my dad had to carry me to wherever I was going to. So it was hard for me. And looking at my leg, it wasn't just appealing. Like, I was at the peak of my teenagehood. I was a girl. And the only thing I was seeing was an unattractive leg. So I hated staring at my leg. I hated my body in general. So I was just moving on, hoping to die, even though I didn't have the mind to kill myself. I think that was something that saved me, because I wasn't courageous enough to commit suicide. So I was just there hoping that this ends, or probably God shows up and heals me, although it wasn't coming forth. So we continued, and the pain was what actually frustrated me, because I think the pain got to my brain. I can't even describe the pain I always felt, but it got to my brain. It was so horrible, to the point that the doctors had to stop giving me pain relief drugs, because they said I was having an overdose and it wasn't working for me. So it was just like me taking drugs, compiling it in my stomach and probably damaging my liver or my lungs or kidney, I don't know. So they had to stop giving me pain relief drugs. So I had to endure the pain every day. And the wound was horrible, because they thought it was cancer, but it wasn't cancer. They thought it was diabetes, but I didn't have diabetes. So they couldn't just understand what was happening. So it was at that point that I had to tell my dad that I wanted to amputate my leg, because they had given us that suggestion, but we rejected it. We said probably that we'll try to save the leg. But the leg started developing gangrene. Like, gangrene is where a part of the body starts drying up because of blood isn't flowing to that part of the body. So my leg started developing gangrene. It was drying up gradually. And doctors said again that if I do not amputate the leg, if I try to save it, I might die in the process. So the only way to save my life was to amputate the leg. So at that point, I was like, I beg anything. And I needed to go to school. I needed to do things that I used to do before. So I just like, okay, fine. Let's just cut it. So it was really a battle at home, because my grandma, my uncles, and my aunts were like, how would you cut her leg? She's a girl, Adao, your first daughter, that kind of thing, that they should wait first, let them handle it. And it was a really, really serious problem for my dad. So at that point, they just asked me. And I told them that I want to amputate the leg that was tired. So that was when I amputated the leg in 2012, 10th of November. I didn't have any idea about prosthesis. I didn't even know something like that existed. So I was just beginning to accept my life, probably to use crutches and everything. But when I had the amputation, doctor said, that's when he enlightened us that there's something called prosthesis and you could use it instead of crutches and everything. I was like, okay, fine. My dad was like, okay, you'll get it for me. So they got it for me. And me being a perfectionist, I wanted to be as perfect as possible when I was walking. So it made me learn how to walk fast with the prosthesis, even if I didn't have it's training or coaching, I don't know. So I didn't really have all those processes where the prosthetician is taking you through walking steps and everything. So I had to do everything by myself at home. And I did it because the next year I was preparing for my exam and I wanted to go to school. I think that was like one thing that really drove me, because all my friends, they've already gone to the university and I was still at home. I had written JAMB and WAEC that year. So I was still at home. All my friends, my mates, they've gone ahead and I was just there. So I think that was one thing that really inspired me to want to amputate my leg, inspired me to want to just learn to adapt to my new situation. So, yeah.
How old were you when you made that decision to have the amputation?
I was 18. I was 18 years, yeah.
And I have to say, I have to respect your parents for giving you that decision, because in many instances, it tends to be the external family who always try and give the final decision. But your parents respected you enough to know that this is your body, so you went ahead with that. Because also talking about what's happening, I want to talk about, if you don't mind me asking, you find yourself in a predicament whereby you have to make a tough decision, whether you hold on to the leg or you have to do with the amputation. What kind of challenges did you face from family and also the wider society, especially certain communities that believe in dark medicine or black medicine or the power of the church or belief or spirituality? What was going through your mind through all these instances coming your way?
At that point, I didn't really think about other people. I was thinking about myself. So I was being selfish at that point. So I said, I didn't really think much about what the church had to say or what my family members had to say. I was basically worrying about my own health, my own safety, and me bouncing back and doing the things I used to enjoy doing. So that was like the motivation behind me saying, yes, I want to amputate my leg. So,
do you feel as a person who's had to go through an amputation that there's a danger within certain communities that believe there's not a distinction between what is seen as medical and what is seen as spiritual? Because many things which are obviously medical issues, people chalk it up to being, it's a spiritual matter, it's a spiritual matter. What are your thoughts on that?
Coming from a place like Nigeria and knowing that we are more about spirituality, I think diabolical things actually do exist.
Of course.
But, yeah, they exist. But I don't really know where to place my own situation because it's just there. Like, when you have malaria, you go to a hospital, you're diagnosed of malaria, you see the symptoms, and the doctor can say, okay, yeah, these are symptoms of malaria. So you'll rest assured that this is malaria, or probably when you have any other ailment. But mine was that when we went to the hospital, they didn't see anything. Hmm. Even when I did an x-ray, there was nothing. My bones were okay. So even when the doctor said, you have osteomyelitis, something that has to do with your bones, my bones were perfect. So there was still something happening to my leg physically. But it was not traceable by the doctors. So I'm still having that belief that it might be something diabolical because we still haven't found the root cause of whatever happened to me.
And what are your thoughts about disabilities in Nigeria? Because for many people, it's seen as something people don't want to talk about, be it physical disabilities or mental disabilities. What are your thoughts on that?
I never really had any idea that something like disability existed growing up. So I see people who had leprosy or something like that. I do see them. But it didn't occur to me that something like disability existed until I found myself in that situation. So that was when I started becoming enlightened by things I used to see but didn't take them into consideration. So in Nigeria, when you talk about disability, it's actually something that people don't like talking about because they feel like it's a very sensitive issue. Even people in disability community don't like talking about their disabilities because they feel like the reaction they're going to get from people is going to be negative and it could affect whatever it is that they are actually aiming for. So right now, as in recently, they've been disability advocates. So they've been talking about disability, persons with disability not being hidden, because most of them were actually hidden or made to cover up their disability. So now they're telling people to just show it. Don't be afraid of whatever will happen. I mean, those that will be in your life will be in your life, and those who wouldn't be, wouldn't be. So right now, I think Nigeria is getting to that place where they are advocating for disability inclusion, even though it feels like nothing is happening. For me, I just feel like we're still making noise, and nothing is happening yet for me. That's how I feel.
You call yourself the cyborg, you cyborg. How do you feel about not having it? It's not a hindrance for you, but as far as you're concerned, it is what it is. How do you feel in the general scheme of things? I know it sounds like a very stupid question to ask. I apologize, but I just want to get your perspective. How do you feel as a person who has this? I don't want to call it disability, because at the end of the day, you make of it what you will. But how do you work with what you have at the moment?
I think it was until last year ending, I decided to actually come out and stop being afraid of what people will say, because I met a friend. She's an amputee like me. And I mean, she's one person that really inspires me, and she inspired me to come out because she's crazier than I am. And she doesn't really care about what people say. So if you give her that stare, she approaches you and like, okay, what? Any problem? Do you have a question? Something like that. So I think I'm getting to that place where I don't really care, although I care, because I wouldn't lie. Sometimes you have to care, but most times I don't really care. And my desire is to just make a life for myself, and for people to just see how industrious or probably innovative I can be, before they realize that, oh, she has a disability. Like, that's what I want to create, a kind of people not seeing me or my disability first, but seeing what I've done and what I'm doing, then they'll have this shock like, oh, she has a disability. Like, that's kind of what I'm trying to create for myself. Mm.
And what would you like to do, Eva, to bring about the issues surrounding disability in Nigeria and create an awareness whereby people shouldn't be defined by the disabilities, but rather than who they are as a person or as individuals?
My plans actually is, I know the power of media, and I'm trying to leverage media and fashion to bring an end to disability exclusion in Nigeria. So I actually follow persons with disability outside the shores of Africa, and let me just say outside Nigeria, and I see how well they are doing for themselves, how well they try to include this community into whatever is happening around their country. And it's something that hardly happens here in Nigeria. So I know that media has this power to create norms and to disable whatever norms that have been. So I'm still pushing towards it, to include persons with disability in the fashion world, because one thing that really got to me was during this, I think it's Black Mermaid, Haley, the Black Mermaid, the
girl that acted Black Mermaid. Oh, what's her name? Haley Berry, or something like that.
I don't know, something, but when she did that, that was something that was out of the norm, and I watched it on Al Jazeera to see how little Black girls were reacting like, oh, she's Black, the first Black mermaid they've ever seen. So like, that reaction was actually priceless for me, and I just feel like it's something that would make sense and probably change a narrative or a perspective here in Nigeria if little children can start seeing persons with disability in the media space, probably acting movies, and not just acting movies where I have to be the heroine, or I have to be the queen, or I have to be the villain. It could just be like a secretary in a movie, you get, or probably a driver in a movie, just be, you know, having a normal life in the movie. And aside being in the movie, I want to see persons with disability coming out, Because the problem we have here is them coming out. There are many events we do hold for them, and you just see this I don't care attitude. They are not really interested. And for me, I feel like we can't create change when these people you are trying to create change for are not interested. So it's more like making them to be interested, to believe in themselves, to come out. So that's like, it's a long thing.
So I guess it's more a question of changing people's mindsets, their approach to how they're perceived, whereby they shouldn't feel as if they're guilty for whatever disabilities they're going through, but rather accept who they are, because it's a condition they have. And it's not a condition per se, it's a situation that they find themselves in. And, you know, well, I can only pass my point of view because I don't have a physical disability, and I'm thankful for that. But at the same time, I like to hope that people who do have it are out there and just showing it to the world. I guess the problem also is people just feel that you have to be quote unquote physically complete. But I think that's
I don't blame them.
Yeah, I
guess. I don't blame them.
Although I have met a few people who have certain disabilities, and boy, do they kick my ass in certain things. That and also Daredevil in Marvel Comics. You'll kick anyone's ass, but that's just my point of view. Okay, look, before we go, first of all, Eva, thank you so much for coming on to the Swinging Palm Trees podcast. Before we go, with your bionic leg and also the story of Samuel and Josiah and also the teacher.
Okay.
You brought everyone together. You've got Samuel, the bald guy, who's now wearing a weave on. You've also got Josiah and his girlfriend, Daniela. And you've also got the teacher.
Yeah.
They're all together and they are doing a dance-off because you said you like dancing. What music would you like to have this dance-off on? And who would you want on your team?
Oh, I think it's... it's the recent Kiss Daniel song, Cough. That's what I'll be dancing to.
Okay.
Cough.
Okay, Eva, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can reach me on my social media account, Basibug. My LinkedIn, Eva Chukunelo, and my email address. EvaChukunelo@gmail.com. That's just it.
And if you'd like to be a guest on the Swinging Palm Trees podcast, please send me an email to theswingingpalmtree@gmail.com. And until next time, be well and Pax Vobisco. And I want to carry my love away to a place she loves.